Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. I am joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com. On this episode, we will talk to Gator great Eddie Shannon, who is now an assistant coach with the South Carolina Gamecocks. Great conversation with Eddie about Billy Donovan, the future in Columbia that him and Lamont Paris and that staff are building, kind of Eddie's journey through coaching. So good chat there. We'll also get into some listener questions on the back half of the episode. So hope you guys enjoy, and thank you as always for your support and for listening. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South, joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com. Eric, man, what's been going on?
Oh, not too much. My college basketball watching has, you know, shifted to NBA playoffs and I mean, underrated EuroLeague basketball. I know it's not easy for everyone to watch, but, you know, I love my all my Spanish ACB Liga teams representing up there. So it's good to see, Scotty Wilbekin, to see Nick Calathes, especially. Man, Nick Calathes, he's still just a treasure to watch. So, and again, I don't watch it with the express interest of like, oh, let's go see what all these, you know, former Gators are up to. But it's just, you know, that's what the University of Florida has been for so long, just producing these top players. So you go watch some top basketball overseas. Of course, here's Nick Calathes is going to be, handling the ball for one of the best teams in the world outside of the NBA. So lots of Gator greats.
No doubt. Speaking of Gator greats, Al Horford, man, what do you make of the renaissance of one Al Horford right now, just tearing it up for the Celtics? He's not even playing well tonight, and the Bucks are still losing, which leads me to believe the Bucks are in trouble.
One thing I think is amazing is just, well, one, I mean, I think we've got a couple listeners that are Oklahoma City fans, so they'll know this and love to hear us talking about it. But Oklahoma City has been known for how good their team doctors are, how good they've been at rehabilitating players. So I think Al Horford kind of hit the lottery by getting to go there for a year where they're tanking. They don't have any interest in Al Horford playing. So he gets to take a sabbatical while working with one of the best kind of rehabilitation specialist programs in the world. And he just looks like a player who's 6 years younger suddenly. Like, he's looking like he threw down a couple dunks that look like, you know, it looked like he just took a drop off pass from Torian Green, you know, like it really looked like he turned back the clock. And I think a large part of it was the way that he did kind of go through the shuffle of being salary filler and got to take a little sabbatical year in Oklahoma City, getting totally healthy. And of course, now he gets to be on a playoff team and kind of reaping the benefits of that. So that's what I kind of think happened. Again, it's also a player that I think is, because of his basketball IQ, his game is going to age pretty well. But just kind of seeing the state of his knees a couple of years ago, I think that the time off definitely helped. And now we're just getting to enjoy, like you said, a renaissance.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that renaissance. Speaking of renaissance, the Gator basketball renaissance really began with our guest tonight. It started, I guess, a little bit before his time. But we have Eddie Shannon, Gator great, with us tonight. He's now an assistant coach with the South Carolina Gamecocks. So obviously, congrats to Coach Shannon for that opportunity that him and Coach Paris and everybody from Chattanooga have got in Columbia. You know, I think we were all very thrilled for Coach Shannon to get that opportunity, but we're happy that he's going to give us 20 minutes or so tonight just to talk a little bit about it. So first, you know, congrats and obviously the journey from Palm Beach Atlantic to now back on the sidelines in the SEC, Eddie.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for having me on as well.
Of course,
pleasure to be here, man. And just so excited to be back in the SEC. And have a chance to, you know, obviously was a player and now get a chance to coach in the SEC, man, is a phenomenal opportunity, and I'm thankful and grateful for it. And, you know, just happy that Coach Paris, you know, thought enough of me to bring me along with him.
Yeah, Eddie, thanks so much for being on. It's great to talk to you. And I'm going to ask a little bit about your story becoming a Gator, and then I'm going to tie it a little bit into what you're doing now at South Carolina. So you were a highly rated recruit coming out of high school. First of all, I know you've told this story, you know, 1,000 times. This will be 1,001. But can you first tell us a little bit about your story of what your game was like in high school, what the recruiting process was like that got you to Florida? And then can you tie that into now that you're South Carolina, you're going to be recruiting a lot of top players. You're going to be recruiting you're going to be recruiting, you know, the next Eddie Shannon. So can you also talk a little bit about how your experience as a really good high school player is going to help you recruit those kinds of players?
Yeah, well, I'm from West Palm Beach, Riviera Beach, actually. And I went to Cardinal Newman. And, you know, I was a pretty good high school player, I guess, you know, some might say. I was recruited by, you know, a ton of schools coming out. Definitely a lot of SEC schools because that's primarily in the South. But I actually committed to Arizona originally. And then my high school coach actually encouraged me to, hey, take another visit. You know, I eliminated a lot of schools early because I really wanted to, you know, commit to a school and then just focus on the season. So, you know, I had a great time in Arizona with Lute Olson and Jesse Evans and those guys. Damon Stoudemire was my host. So I ended up committing. And my high school, you know, I got back to Florida. My high school coach said, hey, I think you need something to compare it to. Let's hold. Let's, you know, you can stay committed, but you need to take a visit to Florida. I did. I think, you know, I had a great time in Florida. And then I realized how close Florida was to, you know, and the convenience of getting back home with Gainesville only being 3 hours from West Palm. I was a little enthralled by that, and I ended up decommitting and choosing Florida. And then, you know, fast forwarding a little bit and, you know, now coaching, it's, you know, you understand the caliber player it takes to win in the SEC. And so you know what you're looking for already, but now it's also a difference in recruiting because you're recruiting against these high-level schools that, you know, this is the first time I'll be recruiting against, you know, really top Power 5 schools and, you know, high-level programs. So it's definitely going to be a challenge, but, hey, you know, I feel like my relationships and my player relations, I have all of those skills and I know the landscape. I've been in a lot of these guys' shoes. I speak the language. I think I'm more than prepared for it. You know, one, for being a player, for two, playing in the SEC and having that experience, I certainly feel like, you know, I'm qualified and will do a certain great job as well.
So you were someone who kind of independently, both Neil and I, when the Gators had some assistant coach openings, past season, we both kind of on our own tweeted out, hey, Eddie Shannon's someone that, you know, Florida should look at, and if not other SEC programs. And I think a lot of it too is like, it's not just what you did as a player, but it is truly what you have accomplished as a coach. And I think that's something you guys have done, did really well, especially at Chattanooga, was develop players. And it's kind of a little bit of a buzzword. Everyone always says, you know, we're good at developing players, you know, our program develops players. But I think the kind of, you know, it doesn't always happen. I'll say that much. So how have you guys at Chattanooga had so much success developing players, and how is that model going to kind of translate to South Carolina?
Well, we hang our hat on development, and we are extremely detail oriented when it comes to that. We've been able to, and I think that that has been attributed to our success at Chattanooga. And again, when we go into the detail, it's the smallest of things, and it can come anywhere from, hey, we need to give this guy a go-to move in this situation so that when he's in this situation, he knows what to do. Or we need to give this guy a move in the post where when the floor looks like this, he's comfortable in getting to this or doing that. That's the detail. And we'll literally spend, you know, we have our individual workout sessions where we do all the ball handling, all that stuff. We do that. But during the season, we really try to fine tune and say, okay, we need to work on John Doe's footwork when he's catching the ball like this. And we'll do we'll spend 15 minutes on just that. And he won't even take a shot. Just work on getting to his footwork, right? So when this happens in the game, you know how to get to it. So once we get that down, we'll add the shot to it. Okay, now we're getting to it. So in practice, and we tell them, make sure you're working on these things in practice. And if we see it on film when they're in a situation and they don't do it, we can call it out, say, hey, remember, you know, we talked about this. You need to try to take these shots or, you know, do what we worked on. So when the game comes, it's not new to you. And we'll know if it works and doesn't work. But if you're not practicing it, we don't know. Right. So we try to dial it back. We try to dial it down. We'll video guys shot, you know, from behind where it's, you know, trying to correct form or see what's can be hindering them and, you know, making shots. And it's a lot of film watching. It's a lot of time spent in the gym with guys. And it's a lot of guys just willing to be uncomfortable in those situations too. But, you know, we talk through it, and it's about, hey, if you're going to get better and you want to get to the next level, as you say you do, let's get in the gym and let's work on the things that are not so sexy as the double step back. You know, let's work on things that are transferable to the game, that are transferable for you as a player, depending on who the player is.
Coach, I know that, you know, one of the things that you guys did, well, really Canisius too, but, you know, you have been able to sustain success as an assistant wherever you've been. But last year certainly had to be really special for you. That Chattanooga team, you guys won 27 games. Really, you could certainly make the argument you were the better team over 40 minutes in the first round and just kind of got snake bit there at the end. I'm sure that was heartbreaking, but you know, what do you take from succeeding in what is really a really good mid-major league with a lot of good young coaches? And you know, you guys take that with you to the SEC, which has been a place where, I mean, you've seen it with Nate Oates, with Mike White. You know, these coaches like Coach Paris and their staffs, they come in, they're young, they're hungry, they get after it. Y'all have a great arena up there. Obviously Don Staley is a superstar. That can't hurt when you recruit kids. You know, what intrigues you about life in Columbia?
I tell you, you know, since we've been here, the school and the city has embraced us with open arms. And it's, you know, I think the freshness of it all, new coach, new staff, it's a novice, an opportunity to have a clean slate, so to speak. And I think the city is ready for that. I think for us, it's the same as we've been doing, you know, work our butts off in every aspect, from recruiting, from film watching, relationship building, community building, investing in our players in every single way, from academics to on the court stuff. That's what we bring to the table, and I think that's what helped us succeed in Chattanooga. We were extremely well-rounded staff. We, you know, some of us are strong in areas where the others of us are weaker, and vice versa. We complement each other well. We have a great chemistry as a staff. We have a great dynamic. We're experienced. We've coached guys that have played at the highest level, guys that are in the NBA. We know what we're talking about. And we're just excited, man, to be honest with you, to get to work and to kind of, you know, get this thing rocking and rolling. And we're excited for the opportunity. It's going to be a challenging opportunity. The SEC is arguably the best conference in the country. You know, it's loaded with talent, you know, from top to bottom, you know, but it's going to be a process, and we're going to do our best. And I'm pretty sure, you know, we'll have success at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love to hear that confidence. One thing I think that Chattanooga basketball was really known for, and something that could really translate to a place like South Carolina, where they kind of embrace this is toughness. You guys were a very tough team mentally. You were very tough physically. I think everyone saw that again in round one of the NCAA tournament. So coach, do you think that toughness is something that you develop, or is toughness something that you recruit?
It's a little of both. I think, you know, Coach Paris's coaching style is, you know, he's got that Midwest mentality is, you know, you got to have tough guys. You got to be willing to get in the mix, you know, put your body in play, sacrifice, you know, what are you willing to do to win games? And again, that goes down to the little things. It's don't bail out of defensive plays. When you're attacking the rim, you know, put, you know, in certain instances, man, you may have to go through guys in certain circumstances. You know, the type of guys that we like are obviously, you know, guys that are tough mentally, physically, and also guys that play, that have good feel for the game, and high IQ guys. You know, that's the system that we run, but we coach that in practice every day. And that's something that we'll watch in film. You know, if we see guys bailing out of plays on film in practice, it'll be on film the next day before practice as we're showing, hey, you had a chance to take a charge here, but you bailed out because you didn't want the contact. That's, you know, those are winning plays. And you have to be tough. And in situations, you know, sometimes you'll get down in games. You know, plays like that are game-changing plays, momentum-changing plays, or momentum-building plays. And that's something that we preach all day, every day in practice. And that's one thing that you'll see out of our teams is teams that guys that are going to be tough and willing to play, playing the right way and playing for each other.
Eddie, you know, I guess rewinding back to the Florida days a little bit, you know, because I think our listeners would love to know. Well, let me pose it to you this way, because I don't think anybody knows at 20 that they're about to play for a future Hall of Fame coach. But it was funny that, you know, when I had a chance to do a story on Coach Donovan, I don't know, a year and a half ago, one thing he said was, well, when I got there, I had Eddie Shannon and Greg Stoltz. So I knew that at least I had something. you know, what was your reflection on that? Because so many kids now might have left, right? Like you were playing for a Final Four coach in Lon Kruger. And suddenly this guy that looks like he might have just shaved for the first time as your head coach. What was that like? And did you get a sense before the Sweet 16 run, your senior year when you're all SEC, did you get a sense that he was special?
Yeah, Billy is awesome, man. You kind of knew something was brewing within him. Immediately, just his passion and what he brought to the table from a passion standpoint, and the staff, those guys were young and, you know, and hungry and exuberant and practice, you know. I still remember Pell and Coach Grant getting in practices and getting in the mix and really pushing guys. So you kind of knew something was brewing. You didn't know quite what. I always thought Coach Donovan was brilliant in his X's and O's, you know, and game adjustments and everything. And he's another guy that, you know, if you're going to play for Coach Donovan, you better be tough and you better be able to take coaching, because he's about the right things. And the one thing I'll say is he may have said that, you know, he had myself and Greg Stoke, but Greg and I came in with a class of six. And just to give you an example, Greg and I were the only two that finished on that team. So it wasn't an easy, like, you better be made the right way to play for those guys, because they were about winning. And if that's not what you were about, or if you weren't tough enough to sustain, you weren't going to last. But it was all in the right way. But just playing for Coach and what he has become, as you reflect on it, you say, yeah, I saw all of that. You might not have known what it was as it was occurring in front of your eyes, but when you look back, you say, yeah, so that's what it looks like to become a Hall of Famer.
I think I would have failed that trivia question of who was in that first recruiting class. So that's a good little bit of insight. You were able to play with some very, very good players over your 4 years. Who was your favorite teammate because of what they played like on the court? And who was your favorite teammate based off, you know, off the court stuff?
My favorite teammate on the court, who I would play with anywhere, is Brent Wright. Brent is a consummate teammate. He is the epitome of winning. I'd hate to play against him and want to play with him because he knows how to win. He knows what it takes. He's selfless. He's going to do every single thing in his power. He's going to play defense as hard as he can. He's going to do what he's supposed to do on offense. He's going to rebound the ball. He's going to be a leader. He's going to talk. To me, on the court, I take Brent Wright anywhere in the world with me at play. I mean, the guy won. He won an SEC championship. He went overseas. I think he won 6 or 7 league championships over there. So it follows him. So on the court, it would definitely be Brent Wright. Off the court, you know, my best friend that played with me at Florida is Kenyon Weeks, and you know, we've been best friends since '96, since he came on his visit, and then he committed to Florida, and you know, we haven't looked back since. So off the court, that's my guy. That's my right hand man, Kenyon Weeks. So one of the best shooters at Florida all time as well. So to answer that question, but it's a bunch of guys that you know, from Florida were great guys that I love, and that was a great time.
So you left the school as the all-time steals leader. I know Chris Chioza got you. I'm sorry about that.
No, he didn't. He got me in steals.
I think he did. I don't know. I think so though. But I know you. Eric's gonna get the right answer for me. But I know when you left, you were second in assists too. Which
I'm not second anymore. I know that. I'm like sixth now.
Yeah, but still top 10 in assist. But the question that everybody wants to know, all right, and you can speak freely about this because I know he does, he being Casey Calvary, was Casey Calvary over the back?
Absolutely he was. Absolutely he was over the back. But you know what? In all honesty, man, you know, in a game like that, unless it's just absolutely egregious, hey ref, let the players decide it, and that's what they did, you know, and that's what they did. So, you know, I'm okay with it. It was such, it was heartbreaking at the time, and I wanted that over the back call, but hey, you know, it was destiny for those guys. And Gonzaga's been Gonzaga ever since then. Ever since that moment, they've been rocking and rolling.
You know what, though, Eddie? Florida has been Florida since that season, too, really. So if you look at it, that I know a lot of those guys, including you, I'm sure, take a lot of pride in that. I guess I'll leave with this and then let Eric wrap up. But, you know, you are back in the SEC. I know a lot of the arenas have changed, but is there a place that you're really looking forward to getting back to?
You can already imagine. that date is marked. You know, that date is certainly marked. Looking forward to the challenge. Looking forward to seeing a lot of the people that were around when I was around, and you know, having the opportunity to coach against the Gators. I know what basketball means to that school. So I'm certainly looking forward to the challenge and the experience.
Yeah, I think you're wrong, Neil. I think Eddie's still got the steal total. It looks like he's got 204 career, and Chris Gioza has like 191. So I think you're safe. See? I think you're safe, Eddie.
I apologize.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. I thought that I was the only
egregious error
that eclipsed the 200 mark.
Yeah, that's amazing.
204 as per basketball reference. So, you know, another story I have told on the podcast a couple of times, but I've got to let you know, Eddie. So, Casey Calvary went on to play 3-on-3 basketball. I don't know if he still is, but this was just a couple of years ago, but I was at an event and saw him there, and I was talking to him, and then I just playfully asked him, hey, you know, were you over the back? And he did not see any humor in that question. I'll tell you that much, even me bringing it up lightly. So, he's not super comfortable. You know, Eddie, I could talk basketball with you forever, and I, you know, look forward to talking to you again. But I will have to throw a Florida question at you, a little bit of a Florida question for this upcoming season. You know, Eddie, I was a big Chattanooga fan. I watched a lot of games last year of you guys. And one of the games I did get to see was VMI and Trey Bonham playing pretty well against you. One game he didn't play super well. You guys got VMI, but another game Trey Bonham played pretty well and I think put up 20 and they got the win. You know, you were able to coach against Trey Bonham. He's now on the Gators. What can you tell Gator fans about his game?
Big time competitor. You know, he's I like Trey for VMI, and I thought he was a big time. Oh, that entire VMI team, those guys really, really competed. And I thought he was one of the catalysts, big time competitor. And, you know, he can play. You know, Florida got a good player.
Well, Eddie, we appreciate your time, man. Good luck in Columbia to you, Coach Paris, the whole staff, the all time leader in steals at the University of Florida. Eddie Shannon.
Hey, thank you guys for having me, man. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. You guys have a good night. Bye.
So that's Eddie Shannon. I made an egregious fact error, which is a nice thing that I can't edit out of a podcast. But, you know, obviously thrilled for him and the opportunity he's going to get. And, I don't know, man. Like, I was thinking about these hires, and I know Matt McMahon is landing every recruit on the planet right now, and, you know, that's the thing. But I like what South Carolina did with Coach Paris.
Yeah, I think it's a good hire. I think that they, like, what I really like is, like, looking at some of these mid-major hires. I like guys that play a style that I think transfers up to the high major level, and that's what Chattanooga did, looking at their guards, looking at their front court players, looking at kind of some of their spread ball screen stuff. I thought that really worked. Something I alluded to talking to Eddie was the fact that they did play super tough. There was definitely a defined style of play, but while they were tough, they didn't lack skill. And I didn't want to, you know, of course, say that. I was thinking about, you know, how I could frame that to Eddie a little bit. But the fact that, you know, South Carolina was very, very skilled these last couple of years under Frank Martin. Or sorry, they're very tough, these Frank Martin teams, but maybe, you know, lacked a little bit of skill. And I think that Lamont Paris will be able to bring some of that toughness that South Carolina really, really likes, but have teams that are a little bit more skilled. So, you know, is South Carolina ever going to be a team that gets all these recruits? I'm not totally sure on that. I think they've got to, you know, so they're going to have to build up players that, you know, maybe aren't the same caliber as some of the top teams in the league. They've got to develop them. They've got to play with a defined style and that's the way they're probably going to win. So I think that's probably a pretty good choice for them.
All right, so we are back. We had a little bit of a technical issue. I will edit that out so you guys won't hear any of that. Anyway, so Eddie Shannon, obviously I made a pretty egregious little fact error there, thinking that Chris Gioza got him in steals when all Chris got was the assist record, all he got. You know, you were saying that you liked what they did with that hire in terms of Coach Paris.
Yeah, well, sorry for all this that you have to edit out, Neil, but I'll just try to say the same thing again here. But, you know, the things I like when I look at mid-major hires are, I really like someone who has a style of play that I think is going to translate to the high major level. And I think with their ability to play in spread ball screen, to throw it into big men on the inside and play off those players, I think it's going to work at the high major level. And I also really like that they're able to balance toughness with skill, like something I kind of alluded to when asking a question to Coach Eddie. And I didn't really want to put it out there, but I mean, one of the problems that South Carolina has had recently is they have been very, very tough, but they haven't been very skilled. So I think that they have a fan base that kind of respects and really likes toughness. And I think that Lamont's teams are going to have that toughness while also having skill. One thing I think that Chattanooga did very, very well, and you can go back and look at it, is like they did really, really well with transfers in an era where that's how everyone's trying to, you know, get better, and not everyone does. They did very, very well with transfers. And I, you know, I mentioned in the podcast in the interview with Eddie, that I really meant is like they really did develop players, like looking at where players started with them, their ability to retain players, and the ability to get those guys better. That is something that not a lot of programs are able to do. So I think it's South Carolina, you know, are they ever going to go, are they going to be pulling 5 stars anytime soon, like they did a few years back? You know, maybe they will. I'd love for Eddie to go get one, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to. So I do think they're going to have to compete with other teams in the SEC, not with raw talent, but with developing guys, finding gems in the transfer portal. And I think they're going to do it. So I know that, like, man, it was not a hire. Like, a lot of people didn't seem to be super stoked on the hire, but it's like, I just don't get it, Matt. Well, I mean, I do get it. I can rant about it. But like, you look at some of the mid-major hires and national media are like, oh, what an incredible find. Like, and guys making huge leaps to big high major jobs from mid-major jobs. And some people are just all over it. And then like Chattanooga, who's been really good for 2 years and in a very good league, better than a lot of these, you know, other leagues where national media are just like foaming at all these, like, you know, these hires. Like, I don't know, there's a whole lot of like C minuses or, you know, C pluses in, you know, of course that's the grading the hire articles. And I think that South Carolina did a lot better than a C. I think, I mean, time will tell. It can be a tough place to win, but I think that South Carolina made a good call.
Yeah. Rob Duster, who we both, I think, respect and like a lot, gave it a B plus. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, Rob said he just thought hiring an African-American head coach who had a lot of success at Chattanooga, sustained success, at a place where Don Staley is probably something that people aren't really thinking about that much. But, like, there's definitely a sense that you can win at basketball there. Like, you're an hour and a half from Charlotte, I tell you. And I'm telling you, like, that's me driving like 5 miles over the speed limit. Like, people that definitely test the laws of traffic a little more aggressively can get there quicker than that. I mean, you are not far from basketball Mecca. So, you know, I think, I don't know. I mean, I like it. And I have started to like look at the Eric Fawcett formula, and the only little ingredient I add at all is sustained success. Like, if they were at that mid-major school for more than 2 years or 3 years, I want to see what their record was. And did it either gradually get better or were they continually good? And the Mocs were good, like all the time they were good. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a good hire. I thought B plus was pretty fair. I'm not going to try to get too deep into the mentions at this point because I made the terrible mistake of retweeting one of those March Madness. Oh, it's because Chandler Parsons tweeted like his starting five and he picked 6 players so he could add his buddy Nick Calathes to the list. And so I made a joke and like people did tore it off into a debate. But I wanted to get back to the Horford point, which I just retweeted that with like 2 minutes to go in the game. The Florida basketball account saw it. They tweeted it. I guess Al Horford, who was having kind of a quiet night when we got on the phone with Eddie, decided he would run in from the three-point line and make a dunk. Now, I have seen some tough John Hollinger takes in the last couple months, and I've talked to Eric about them on off the air. But I heard a John Hollinger take today I agree with, which is that Al Horford is a Hall of Famer. And man, I don't know, like, why I agree with that all of a sudden, or if it's just recency bias from watching in this series or what. But, you know, Bill Simmons calls him, calls Al Horford middle-class Tim Duncan. And I guess the argument with that I've always appreciated that, like, Bill Simmons label for Al, and Bill loves Al and knows a lot about basketball, not as much as Eric Fawcett, but a lot. And I love that Bill Simmons said, you know, if you're middle class Tim Duncan, you're probably a Hall of Famer. So where do you come down on that debate?
My like slightly cynical NBA fandom would point out that whenever there seems to be like a 50-50, like, is this player a Hall of Famer? It usually goes in favor of the player. A lot of guys do end up in. I mean, again, I don't want to try to water down. I mean, if you're NBA Hall of Famer like that, or sorry. And that's one thing. I just said NBA Hall of Fame. I mean, there's one of the things too, where like, if I'm, you know, correct, I think it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame.
That's the other thing.
And that
is the Basketball Hall of Fame.
So you look at, again, what he did with Florida, and it's just one of those things. Like, to me, the Hall of Fame is something where, if we're in 100 years and if somehow this world is still operating somewhat similar to what it is now, and we can look back on basketball, the NBA Hall of Fame should be like a story of basketball, or the Basketball Fame should be a story of basketball. And people in the Hall of Fame should be people that you cannot tell the story of basketball without that person coming up as a character. That's kind of my judge for who should be in the Hall of Fame, is like, can you tell the story of basketball does this player need to be in the conversation or not? And I think if you're going to tell the story of basketball on the whole, of course, college basketball is going to play a huge role in that. And in an era where college basketball was arguably some of the best, where you still had high level NBA players sticking around to play multiple years, you know, the Gators won 2 championships. We can argue who the best player was on those teams, and that would be a whole nother mention storm for your count, Neil. But you could very well say Al Horford. So I think that you add in that he played a pivotal role, perhaps the biggest role, in 2 consecutive national championships at a time where college basketball was excellent and they were beating teams with 6 NBA players on it. And then you add in, you know, you look at the NBA, I think he's a 4 or 5 time NBA All-Star. I don't know if he's ever been on an all NBA team, to be honest with you. Maybe he slipped in on like a 3rd team in the Atlanta days. I'm not totally sure. That would be the one kind of hang up. But long story short, could the story of basketball be told without mentioning Al Horford? I think somewhere in there, with his time in Florida, with his longevity, with those Atlanta Hawks teams that were one of the great, you know, weren't great in the playoffs, but I think in the story of basketball, someone would talk about that excellent regular season team with Damari Carroll and Kyle Korver and Jeff Teague. And then, you know, maybe we'll see what happens to Boston this year. And Horford might have another couple good years and he could go ring chasing. He might end up with a championship, could end up with, you know, it's conceivable. The take first was a little bit surprising to me, but the more I think about it, the more I think you could justify it.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if Hollinger was factoring in the point that you made, which I didn't even think of. Tough night, tough pod for me. That it's the Basketball Hall of Fame. That Hoopall is the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, and it's all of basketball, which still makes it even weirder to me that Bill Self is in and Billy Donovan isn't yet, but whatever. Neither here nor there, I suppose. But yes, so Al, 5-time NBA All-Star, 2-time NBA All-Defensive Team selection, was on the All-Rookie Team, and to Eric's credit, the great Hawks team that he referenced, that was a year where Al made the All-NBA team.
Nice.
2010-2011. So he has one of those. He also has 2 All-Regional teams in the NCAA tournament. He was not the most outstanding player in either, because Corey Brewer won it the second year. But, you know, certainly the war that he had with Greg Oden in that national final, I think a lot of people don't, you know, that's the thing that people remember about from that game that aren't Gator fans, right? They remember that it was Greg Oden and Donovan was like, we're just going to let Al Horford guard him. And if he gets 30, he gets 30. That's fine. Al will be fine. And Al was, and Florida won. So that was kind of, that's an interesting take. It's an interesting discussion to have. I don't know if this Boston team is good enough to win a championship. You know, maybe crazier things have happened, but I don't think they are. Jason Tatum is really good, but you know, it's tough for me to see it. But certainly, if they upset the Bucks, which to me would be an upset, that's something. And then they're in the conference finals, and once you're in the conference finals, I guess anything can happen. And Al's made a lot of trips to the conference finals. So that's another thing to kind of consider with his playing career. I wanted to get your thoughts on another little tidbit that kind of came up this week before we dive into a couple of listener questions, which was that Todd Golden was on Field of 68 and was talking about recruiting and just like different guys he really wanted to recruit, and apparently like didn't have to sell Bruce Pearl that much on Jared Harper, but Anthony McLemore, who was an All-SEC player, like apparently like this is a pretty hard sell, and he told a story about it. Like, your thoughts on like a young Todd Golden trying to sell Bruce Pearl on a player like Anthony McLemore? And you know, to me, it also showed me that, you know, Golden obviously has a real eye for talent, because he's trying to sell Bruce Pearl on like a three-star player who ends up being just tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a funny conversation to soon visualize just the difference in personalities between the two. And of course, when one of those personalities has the, you know, the power in their relationship and one person's trying to sell, it makes it even funnier. So it's a funny conversation to visualize for sure. It is also funny too, because it's not like this was not the days quite, you know, when Pearl was regularly pulling the five stars as much, I don't think. So like to try to sell him on a three-star like that, who I think that would have, it obviously like ultimately ended up being like, wow, this is the perfect player to play for Bruce Pearl. But again, I think the part of the story I really like is just that there's key statistical indicators that was looking for out of a player, Todd Golden was, and that's where he went and found it. Like, I just want to see out of, you know, Florida's basketball coaches, who whoever it may be going back years to, you know, for years in the future, you know, just someone that has a plan in mind of what they're looking for. And if you were to look at some of the players that Florida has pulled over the last few years, you would not be able to pinpoint a style of play or what was trying to be built. Just looking at the skill sets, the positional breakdowns, all that, it just didn't seem to be super focused. And there was a lot of very talented players that didn't fit in, you know, particularly well. So to see that, a story from years ago, when Todd Golden wasn't even a head coach, but he knew he had to target specific styles of players to fit what Auburn was doing at the time and what would work in the SEC. Well, now he's the head coach, and I don't think that's going to change. And that was something with Trey Bonham that I love. That part of the reason I think he's underrated is like, does he have eye-popping stats everywhere? No. Is he really, really good at pick and rolls? Yes, he was one of the best in the country. Well, what are you going to need out of your undersized point guard? He's going to have the ball in his hands and he's going to be running pick and rolls. Does it matter that he wasn't great as a cutter? Does it matter that he wasn't great on offensive rebounds or off ball action? No, you're going to have the ball in his hands when he's on the floor, bringing the ball up the floor. Was he good in those settings? Yes, he was excellent and probably underrated. Okay, perfect. So it's just one of those things that like Golden showed with that story with McLemore, that he attacks particular kind of skill sets and has an understanding of what it takes to fit pieces together and what wins of the SEC. And we're already seeing that in his time at Florida, I will say, particularly with the take of Trey Bonham, which we all really like and are excited for. That was something that showed those same kind of, you know, talents. And you know, that's an under the radar transfer. So you can only imagine when it comes to now, it's like, hey, is there a middle four star that should actually be a five star? I mean, I think that's something we'll hopefully see under Golden.
We have a listener question from Father Albert, who wants to know if Florida might make a run at any of the late portal additions like Josh Minot or Mohammed Gay.
I don't see why not. I mean, I think they still have a bunch of scholarships and available. And again, we just talked about how we really like Trey Bonham. If he's kind of your only point guard mixed in with Denzel Aberdeen, do you feel great about that rotation? No, you might feel good, but not great. And you can improve on good or pretty good. Same as, you know, the front court. You really like the starters or maybe the projected starters, but you maybe think you could get a proven guy at power forward or a swing guy that could come off the bench and play the five, four or five. So it's like, yeah, any of these late portal guys. I mean, again, Josh Minot specifically, I don't particularly think so, but there's a lot of names in there and I just don't see kind of anyone off the board, whether it be some high major bounce backs, whether it be somebody's kind of underrated mid-major guys, or, you know, in between, which I guess would be like a Josh Minot. But I think it's all fair game right now, honestly, with the kind of the scholarships they still have.
So next listener question from Why Not Florida, Paul Ant 94. If Florida lands the St. Bonaventure duo, are they the SEC favorite? No. But I think like it probably raises my ceiling from like this team is a team that could very well get to the second round and play a game for the Sweet 16 to, you know, hey, Ty Golden has a decent shot at the Sweet 16 year one. You know, I'm not going to say Elite Eight with that group. I still don't think my biggest thing is I don't think there's enough shooters right now. Like, I just don't, you know, I think that's going to be an issue. But last year I thought they'd be able to shoot fine, and boy, was I wrong. So.
Yeah, shooting can be fickle again in the, you know, the 30 game sample size of a college season. That's fair. I mean, I'll say this, and not that this should be treated 100% as gospel, even though you might think so listening to this podcast, but Bart Torvik, I think as we speak, have the Gators as the sixth best SEC team going into next season. I think that is totally fair. That's totally reasonable. That's probably where I would have them right now. So would landing the St. Bonaventure duo take them from 6-1? No, I don't believe so. But does it get them from like, and I think we've kind of seen like, you know, tier talk in the SEC. Like it's been like, there's been like top four or five are usually have been a tier in the SEC recently. So does landing those guys get you a little bit closer to landing in that kind of seat? Maybe. And I'll say this, I mean, man, you look at what the SEC is doing right now, finishing fifth in the SEC could still very well put you in that Sweet 16 conversation, which is maybe a extremely hot take. I'm not saying that I think five SEC teams will make the Sweet 16 this year, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing that's ever happened. And if the fifth, sixth and seventh teams in the SEC were good enough to make that run, if the bracket kind of broke right, like, you know, I could absolutely see that. So I like what you said, Neil, that maybe they do really well at the final scholarships, that they kind of end up in that mix. But yes, would it make them the favorite? No, I don't even think that there's, you know, two or three players in the portal that if Florida were to land all of them would make them the favorite. Truth, I mean, you know, maybe we could concoct that where there's like a true dream, two or three guys remaining that could make the Gators the favorite in the SEC. But I don't even think that's the case. So would it be the pair of St. Bonaventure players? No, I just do not see the Gators entering next season as the SEC favorite.
So there was chatter that Kyle Lofton was going to visit Boise State as well. That is not happening. So I know he got back from Rutgers, popped in, probably saw the fam, which is like 20 minutes away. That's a tough deal. We'll see what happens there. But since I'm getting it's a Florida Purdue Rutgers deal on him. If you believe in tea leaves as to where the Florida staff's head is at, Khalil Shabazz kind of quietly returned to San Francisco yesterday. And it kind of made me think, Eric, that this is so speculative. This is like Malik Grady category stuff where I need Malik to go down the rabbit hole and like confirm everything for me through like 25 inferences. But yeah, I mean, like, it seems like Shabazz like came out and was like, I'm in the portal, to see if Todd Golden and the Florida staff were like, come on down. And it like didn't happen. So he's like, I'm back, maybe at San Francisco. Which might be an indication that they feel pretty decent about where they are with Kyle Lofton.
Yeah, I don't know if they got in touch with Shabazz. I don't know, but I will say that I was, you know, looking around for my own interest. And I don't think he'd be a take for Florida. Not like if they ended up with him and that ends up being like a backup point guard. I mean, like, hey, that's still, you know, pretty good for a backup point guard. So it's a player that maybe I kind of wish kept hanging around in the portal on the off chance that the Florida misses out on everyone. But I'm not very big on his game translating to the high majors. So yeah, again, we're speculating that maybe the Gators reached out, but yeah, it wouldn't have been a player that excited me a ton. So that's all right. But you know, if Malik still wants to go get down the rabbit hole for that, no, Malik should probably take a break at this point of the offseason. But yeah, I still think that it's Kyle Lofton that Florida would be most interested in. I still think Emoja Gibson from Oklahoma is someone that the Gators are going after pretty hard, and I think a lot of teams are. He's been one of those guys that I think played the timing of the portal really well, where I think that if he came out right at the start of kind of portal season and everyone's in the portal, I don't think he got the same looks. But by coming out a little bit later, there's a lot of really good teams, I mean, like Florida, that still have space available, and he's going to be picking between some really, really good programs. So, yeah, I think he played that excellently. Well done, Gibson. It makes me think he's a very intelligent player, which makes me want him even more on the Gators. So he's a very interesting player as like not a true point guard, but you know, 6'1" and like 155 pounds, 160 pounds or something like that. But man, he can shoot the ball, has been doing it consistently. And yeah, I think it would be a good ad for the Gators for sure. And that's when I think the Gators are in on.
Yeah, another guy that it looks like is probably headed back to Starkville is Shaquille Moore. I know that some people had said, again, the tea leaves are kind of lining up to where like the other guards that Florida was kind of, you thought Florida might bring in, are fading by the wayside. Slipper Still Fits does prognostications on some of these players so that people like Eric Fawcett and myself don't have to. And another guy that they complimented for playing the portal perfectly. And I think they're very good at what they do. It's Slipper Still Fits, even though it's a Gonzaga site. But was Kevin McCullough. He got the G League invite yesterday. So congrats to him. But I don't think it's the G League for him. I think it's Gonzaga, and so do they. And, you know, when you get the G League invite and you head out to Gonzaga anyway for a visit, it's usually an indication that you might be thinking about staying in college when you hit up a program like Gonzaga. Amani Bates announced that he won't say anything until June, which I think disappointed some Louisville people that were ready to pop bottles. But I still think if you're a Louisville fan and Bates is playing college basketball next year, you feel good. That's where they were at. And then a couple other predictions that they made were Isaiah Mosley to Kansas, Kyle Lofton to Florida, and then Tyrese Hunter. They just have, we don't know, but he's good.
Yeah, he'll get some NIL money wherever he goes for sure. And he deserves it based off the season he had. Still definitely wish he was a Gator from that time. When
oh, man. He should go to JU, play for Coach Mincy.
can't count them out. They've got a couple high major, you know, transfers already. So why
big
not?
Time, baby.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good to hear, you know, other sources saying third party prognosticators saying that they see Lofton to the Gators. That would be a player that would excite us very much. Something that some people have been asking me or kind of throwing out on the Gator Country forums is like, if Florida, you know, Florida gets Gibson, does it disqualify Lofton? If they get Lofton, does it disqualify Gibson? What do you think about that, Neil?
Man, again, my issue is shooters. And the one thing, like, when I read what Eric said about Gibson and then heard him talk about him, I mean, I almost like blacked out just because what I know about him is he can make shots, right? And that's like, it's Florida needs, and this, not just to prove me right against Eric for like one time out of five, you know, usually I win one of five arguments, but like, I feel like Colin Castleton is a pretty good passer. And I just don't think that in that offense that he was ever going to really succeed in a world where Myron Jones was shooting 29%. I don't think Myron Jones is going to shoot 29% next year, by the way. But I still think that if you have Gibson and Jones, suddenly you're a much better team offensively. I think CJ Felder is a pretty good passer from the very limited basketball we saw him play. I think he's a guy who can hit people on the perimeter. I mean, I just think Gibson really would help Florida win. And the biggest reason to me he would help Florida win is because he can hit shots.
Yeah, it's I still like the fit again in a half court offense that we think is going to run through Castleton a whole bunch, to have someone like Gibson who can take the ball up the floor and then get it to if he needs to, him or Trey Bonham, get it into Castleton, get it into whoever's kind of playing the pivot spot of that offense, and then space the floor. And that's what's so impressive about Gibson is, when you look at the way he's made shots, it like doesn't matter if it's like on the catch, off screens, off the dribble, like any way that you can shoot a three, he has done it, and he has done it successfully. And that's just like not the case for a lot of shooters. Like, again, it's like with Myron Jones, for example, it was like, he was good coming off screens and, you know, he's a good catch and shoot player, but he wasn't very good off the dribble. And we saw his off the dribble attempts not go very well for Florida, which is predictable because that hasn't been he hasn't been able to hit those shots kind of throughout his college career. So it's just like, there's few shooters that are good, like in any kind of like faction of 3-point shooting, and Gibson is. And you know, I was just thinking, Neil, one of the things you've definitely bested me at was last season's preseason predictions / over unders / superlatives. I was just thinking, the odds maker here, who is me, I will have no idea what to set the number at for Myron Jones' 3-point percentage. But I can tell you this, Neil, one of the questions for our preseason prediction over-unders will be Myron Jones' 3-point percentage. And I have no idea what the number will be, but we'll see if I can come up with something that somehow makes us have to think about it.
I love it. I love it. But yeah, to answer your question, I mean, I think if I'm not sure they can sign both Gibson and Shun Asunwe and Kyle Lofton. And so I do wonder, you know, if Florida is kind of like playing that very delicately so that they don't lose all of them. You know, I certainly want to get one of those guys, maybe two of those guys. A guy I do think they'll get is Riley Kugel, which is part of why I say that they can't take all three, is I'm pretty sure they're going to take Riley Kugel, which honestly makes sense. I mean, he's a 6'4-ish, 6'5", depending on your recruiting service, you know, wing that ranks anywhere from a top 50 player to a top 100 player, depending on the service. And then you watch him on video and he looks more like a top 50 player than a top 100 player, Eric.
Yeah, and it's honestly one of those things. I mean, I kind of referenced him talking to someone a couple weeks ago about as a top 50 player. He's like, what? He's not a top 50 player. And it's one of those things where, like, he kind of was ranked as a top 50 player, and then some of the noise that he might not qualify academically kind of came out, and then you kind of saw that his ranking kind of dipped. And again, it's kind of the same thing where, like, you know, if a three-star player signs with a high major team that's or a blue blood, they kind of get the bump. You also kind of see it as like recruitment's cool for guys. Like, there's no kind of incentive or for these recruiting rankings to, you know, shoot a guy up the rankings. It makes more sense to drop him. And that's a lot of what these guys, you know, are doing. They obviously can't watch hundreds and hundreds of players really closely, so they're following what kind of interest is this guy getting. So if a guy's not getting interest, even if it's because of academic reasons, they're still going to say, oh man, there's not a lot of, you know, buzz at this player from high level teams. They must not be kind of as good as maybe, you know, people thought. So I'll say that I think he's closer to the 50th ranking. And I think that if he was kind of recruited normally, that's how it would bear out. And on the topic of his academics, hey, congratulations to him. Today on his Instagram, he put up some pictures with his gown, I think, graduating, or some of the paperwork from his high school graduation. So hopefully things are all on track for him and wherever he's able to go next for school. Academics are not an issue. He gets everything figured out, and he gets to kind of show his talent as a basketball player. But it's good to see him posting some graduation stuff on his Instagram today. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I hope that does mean that he's where he needs to be academically to go to Florida. I think he really wants to go to Florida. So you know, everything that he posts on social media suggests he wants to be in Gainesville, and I think the staff really wants him to. So it's just a can they get him in issue. And it was good to see that stuff today that Eric referenced as we record on a Wednesday. I talked up Al Horford earlier. The Celtics lost. I guess Giannis went nuts in the last 5 minutes of the game, as he's prone to do. And now I think the Bucks lead 3-2, Eric, headed back to Milwaukee. So maybe not another conference finals trip for Al Horford. We'll see. you know, crazier things have happened, like I said earlier on the show, but I doubt that they're going to be able to win two consecutive games to knock out Milwaukee. So maybe we'll get that Heat Milwaukee conference finals that we all deserve as basketball fans anyway. But Eric, any thoughts on the East or the West? What's intriguing you before we sign off?
It's good to see some close series for sure. It's made for some good basketball, and it's nice to be out of an age where it was like, it's going to be Golden State versus whoever, or it's going to be, you know, LeBron versus whoever, or it's going to be LeBron, wherever he is, versus Golden State. That's been kind of the recent history. And I don't think it's good for the NBA, unfortunately. Like, I think dynasties are great to some extent, but I do think there was, I think they lost some kind of casual fan interest during a little bit of the dynasty age recently. So I think it's great. I think it's great for all small market teams to see Milwaukee kind of stay really good after winning a championship. So I love seeing that. So that's one of the things that strikes me. And it's even one of those things where I'm like, I don't even know who I want to win each of these series. I don't even know how I want to win a championship. I'm just like happy to see those series and good games. And that's what we're getting. So I think this has been a fantastic playoffs, and I hope that it kind of continues and culminates with a very fantastic, NBA finals.
Yeah. I'm kind of, I don't know if I'm low key rooting for Chris Paul. But I guess I kind of am low key rooting for Chris Paul. But that may shift to a more moderate key now that Al Horford's down 3-2. So I don't have to feel like I need a shower after I watch and cheer for the Celtics, just to clean all the nasty Celtics cheering off of me. Apologies to any Celtics fans out there listening. bad jokes. So thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed Coach Shannon. We will be back soon, probably with some basketball news in terms of rosters here in the next week or two, but we'll be back next week. So we will solicit some listener questions, line up a guest, and talk to y'all soon. Until then,
go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.